Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Richard, America's a country where many restless souls have come to live and get a second chance on life.
Yeah, I'm one of them, actually, Jim. Unlike my sisters who stayed in England when my parents moved back to Britain, I decided to live here in the U.S. And in a sense, I was able to reinvent myself.
Yeah, looking forward to that. So, but today our show is about second chances.
Why Google search condemns former inmates to life without a job.
We're all looking for easy categories to put people in. That's human nature. And we can't eliminate that completely. So again, with the internet, the first thing you see, as you're saying, is that mugshot. And imagine that in an interview process where it's a first or second interview, or even before the person comes in. They're not even going to get that interview in many cases. So it's a big problem.
Our show is about fixes.
Yeah, how to make the world a better place.
How do we fix it?
How do we fix it?
The United States has the largest prison population in the world, with more than 2 million people in jails and prisons. 90% of those people will get out eventually, but after inmates have served their time and paid their debt to society, too often their pasts stay with them.
Yeah, Google makes certain of that. Just type in someone's name and you can learn all kinds of things about them, including the bad stuff, whether or not they have a criminal record, for instance. And in many cases, you even see their mugshot.
Our guest is entrepreneur Brian Hamilton, co-founder and chairman of the financial analytics firm SageWorks.
And he's a friend of mine. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, guys.
Brian is also founder of Inmates to Entrepreneurs, an outreach organization that helps ex-offenders start their own businesses. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
So, Brian, you're pretty fired up about this. Why is it unfair to former criminals to be judged by what they did in their past?
Well, I don't think it's unfair that people get judged. I certainly don't think it's unfair that people serve time. My problem is that when people get out, because of the emergence of the internet, their profiles may be on there forever. And therefore, even after a long period of time, if you search them, you can see that record. And the real issue on that, Richard, is that there is systematic discrimination against these people by employers who always obviously Google people.
And sometimes these crimes aren't really that serious. I mean, we're not necessarily talking about, you know, violent criminals. One of the cases I know you've been involved with was a woman who was convicted of shoplifting when she was 16.
Yeah, literally. She's a 25-year-old woman who shoplifted when she was 16 years old. She got a charge. She didn't serve prison time. But because she's not sort of a well-known person, you do a Google on her, and the only thing that pops up is a mugshot of that theft when she was 16 years old. I'm talking about like 9, 10 years later. So that's my real beef with it. Not that people are accountable, but that once they get in the public domain in Google, they stay there forever, regardless of whether their crime is a small one or a large one.
That's an interesting point. So for someone like you, if I Google you, I find out all about the businesses, the articles you've written.
That's because I'm so famous.
But famous enough. I mean, you have a digital footprint. Right. Someone who isn't like that, the one time their name was in the system or in a newspaper or something was the crime they committed. I never thought of that as
a problem. Just think about the average person. They're not going to have a Google result that's notable. So you type the name in, they come up with the mugshot, by the way. The mugshot is very similar to one where if it's a small drug possession, it would be similar to something as if they robbed a bank. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing you see on the person.
We did some research.
Which we usually do, Brian.
Yeah. And one of the numbers that popped out at me was 3/4 of ex-offenders are jobless, I think at least a year after they got out of jail, right. And less than half are working full-time 5 years after they're released. Now, because we have such a large prison population in this country, that's a big waste. It's kind of a drag on the economy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It costs about $80 billion a year to put people in prison, keep them there. You got also another 5 million approximately on parole. So what do we want as a society? We want those people back in productive jobs, making money, and certainly not committing crimes. Look, with the emergence of the internet in particular, I would say that they're almost just knocked out of the process automatically, even before that background check or a second or third interview. And that's my real problem with it.
You know, there's this thing, and I'm very interested in the way the mind works and all these cognitive biases we have. And one of them is the priority bias, where you're really affected by the first thing you see.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's
we all are. Yeah. Absolutely. We're all looking for easy categories to put people in. That's human nature. And we can't eliminate that completely. So again, with the internet, the first thing you see, as you're saying, is that mugshot. And imagine that in an interview process where it's a first or second interview, or even before the person comes in. They're not even going to get that interview in many cases. So it's a big problem. We know it's taken me about 10 years to pronounce recidivism, by the way. But I still don't have to go slow. But we know that's been a long-term problem in the U.S. But we don't want 67% of the people going back to prison because it costs a lot. And it's very bad for their families.
And their communities.
Absolutely.
We've done a previous show with John Pfaff, the writer who's an advocate for prison reform. And he points out how devastating it is for many of these poor communities to have so many, particularly of the young men, out of the community for years at a time.
Right. This problem existed 20, 30 years ago where people come out, they're not productive, they're not having individual initiative, and they end up back in prison. So I don't want to say that this has all been caused by the internet and the advances of technology, but it's definitely not being made better.
Yeah, before we go on to solutions, though, it does seem there is something different today than there was 30 years ago before the internet. And I'm wondering whether you think that search has enabled people to more easily attach labels to others.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. We know that through the internet now. And again, we're dealing with inmates. You're talking about millions of people. And you just type the name in, and for the average Joe, that you're going to get one result. It's going to be a mugshot. And so I think Jim's point is well taken. The first piece of data, the second piece of data you get on anybody or any issue, as a matter of fact, is going to inform how you feel about that issue or that person for a long time.
So what can Google do about this? Because Google is by far and away the most powerful search engine.
Look, I don't know. I think that what would be fair. So someone robs a grocery store and they go to prison for 5 years and they serve their time. And we all kind of agree on that. If you do something bad, you should serve time or, you know, pay your debts to society, all this stuff. But there's got to be a period of time after which that sort of internet imprint goes away. By the way, in the U.S., if you declare bankruptcy, which is, you know, the technical term for that is you stiff your creditors, you declare bankruptcy and you just go Chapter 7. You say, look, I'm not going to pay you the debt I owe you. If I owe you a buck, I'm not going to pay you. That stays on your credit report for 10 years. Did you know that? Only 10. So after 10 years, no one even knows you've declared bankruptcy.
I think America, the United States, was the first country in the world to be so forgiving about debt, that the land of second chances, that people were allowed to screw up in their financial life and then, you know, reinvent themselves, go somewhere else and start another business.
Even some notable politicians, actually.
And a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, the typical entrepreneur has usually failed once or twice in starting
a business. I won't say
they
all declared bankruptcy, but I'll say this, that everybody in our country, we're founded on the idea that you get the second chance, excepting African Americans who were brought over here against their consent, obviously. All of us came here, all of our ancestors came here to get the second chance. So we all believe in that. But if you possess a small drug or, you know, have a small charge against you, shoplifting, something like that, that is now a digital footprint that just right now there's no legislation on this at all.
And I would expect, I don't have the data on this, but I would expect that this hits minority communities a lot harder. You know, you mentioned shoplifting. Yes. I got to say, I knew so many teenage girls who shoplifted and some who got caught as kids. But, you know, white kids from the suburbs who are probably heading off to college, they didn't get charged as severely, or they got some kind of action that got wiped off their records. And I wonder if that's the same for kids in the inner city. I doubt it that it is.
Well, they don't have the same amount of representation. We all know that. So there's no question about that. In our society today, there's just way too much representation of minorities in the prison system.
Well, there's a personal case I know where the parents, their son, got into trouble, and they just simply paid a lawyer $1,500 bucks to make sure that that was wiped off the kid's record.
It's not a different issue. They're related, but there's just like this big dumpster effect that we have with minorities today where we have a lot of young people, a lot of young males in particular, who are going to prison. They just go away. We don't see them. But what we don't see is the effect on the families. They're going to be coming out again, and then future crimes they're going to commit as well.
So your group, Inmates to Entrepreneurs, what does it do? How does it help someone?
We teach formerly incarcerated people how to start low capital businesses, businesses that require less than $500 to start. That's what we're all about. And that's really that simple. And we take them from day one. You get out of prison. How can you get your first dollar of revenue? And we stay right there. Now, we will work with businesses that are a little bit larger, but we are all about getting those businesses started.
And are there some skills that they may need to be coached on? I know you have mentors.
I started doing this back in 1992. I would go and talk at prisons and do classes. And those things were always really well received. You know, I mean, we really, you could just, you hit a vein there because people know, they get it. They totally get that inmates need help. And they might have a very difficult time finding a job. We, about 2 or 3 years ago, and it made a big difference, started getting mentors. So we have this group of mentors, coaches. Most of them are formerly incarcerated. They know the whole cycle of life there, right? And so we assign every business a mentor, a friend. You can call somebody. I did a lot of research on the AA program before really getting this thing going. That model is a really beautiful model.
What, Alcoholics Anonymous?
Yeah, exactly. It's a beautiful model. So when you come in to our program, you fill out a little application, a little one pager, and we couldn't vet you on, you know, whether you're for real and you really want to start a business. And then we assign you to a mentor.
So, sort of like if you're an AA, you get a sponsor.
Exactly. Exactly. Because getting back to your question and the point, you find that people want a friend. You know, this is true just generally in entrepreneurship. You got Jobs and Wozniak. You got Gates and Allen and Peanut Butter Jelly. You usually have a couple people. The inmates coming out generally, not always, have isolated their families. Maybe there's been drugs involved and people don't trust them. They're alone. And we got to get them from...
Or their friends might be criminals, so they need new friends.
Even worse, exactly. Now, that's right. You're compounding issues, right? But the point is that we want to line them up with a friend, a colleague, someone to bounce ideas off of. And that was one thing that was missing from our program for a long time.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
It's How Do We Fix It? I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Meggs.
And our guest is Brian Hamilton, chairman and co-founder of SageWorks. And Brian is also the founder of the group Inmates to Entrepreneurs. So let's talk about that group and what part of the solution it occupies. I mean, what are you saying to inmates that perhaps others aren't?
In our society, there is two ways that disenfranchised groups have historically become enfranchised. One is through education, and the second way is through entrepreneurship. Now, if you look at the history of immigrant groups, as they came here, maybe it wasn't the first generation, but by the second generation, the parents would say, hey, look, we're going to rise up and we're going to get you educated, and things are going to be better. And that works. It does not work for inmates. Typically, not in every case, but typically the people who commit crimes are not as well educated. So to me, the only way to systematically get them out of the situation they're in now is to get them into entrepreneurship. If you come to my door on a weekend, on a Saturday, and you want to cut my lawn, I am not going to ask you whether you've gone to prison. I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to ask you where you're from. And all this. You have a lawnmower. I'm going to let you cut that lawn. You can charge me $30, $40, whatever it is. And there's no screening, right? Because I just want my lawn cut.
Well, you've worked with inmates. Yeah. Give us a couple of examples of people who have been helped.
Yeah. Every mentor that we have, or I think almost every mentor, has been incarcerated. And they got out and they started small businesses. And some of them are now like really great businesses. We have a guy who, one of our mentors, runs a janitorial service. And he's got like 150 employees and he's doing great. He was a drug dealer from Durham, North Carolina. Was a drug dealer. And Lawrence is doing terrific. So it can be done. And of course, we have a group of very passionate people because they've actually lived the experience.
In one account of one of these cases, I saw reference to a study from 2013 that said, quote, smart teenagers who engage in illicit activities are more likely to become successful entrepreneurs than equally intelligent, rule-abiding teenagers.
Well, you know, that goes into the history, not just of the criminal justice system, but our society generally. I always say entrepreneurs are kind of misfits. I'm one of them. But I think that they think differently. There's certain skills, for example, with drug dealing. You know, you learn how to buy and sell in markets and all this stuff. And it's a bit of a training ground, although I wouldn't, you know, recommend it. But I will tell you this, that I think we got to get to these communities early. We've got to recognize that a lot of these groups are not going to go down the education route. It works.
Brian, I'm a podcast listener, and I love stories. I want another story about somebody who you can think of, not just Lawrence in Durham, North Carolina, but somebody else who has moved from possibly a life without a job to something that's special.
Well, there's another guy that we work with, and I love this guy. I actually met him, I think, at Orange County Correctional Facility, and he was in prison. I remember teaching this class, and you know, we just sort of became pen pals. He got out, and now he runs this company that basically maintains gym equipment, and they sell gym equipment, all this other stuff. And he's all the way through North Carolina now. And he just did that by learning how to fix equipment and then going to these little gym facilities, even facility in like in a building, fix the equipment, and then build his book of business up slowly. So we have like a gym in our office, and I don't know what other people do, but if a vendor comes to me, someone who's selling something, and they say, look, we have a gym equipment maintenance business, whatever it is, I'm not going to ask them where they went to school. Or I really don't care. I'm going to say, you know, we have a couple of references, customer references. We'll call the customer references and we hire them. We don't look into the vendor's
personal
background.
No, right?
We don't look at their, that's right. We don't look into their personal background. We look into their business background. If you can develop a technical skill, any technical skill, you can fix a toilet, you can fix gym equipment, you can cut a lawn, any technical thing you can do, you can be a subcontractor or a contractor, you can usually start those businesses for a very low amount of money.
One of the case studies I looked at, one of these businesses started by an ex-con, said he only hires former prisoners, and he said they work harder. One direct quote was, Let's just say the people who show up late in my office were not previously incarcerated. The former inmates are the ones who are always on time.
They've seen the bottom, right? You see the bottom. You know what that's like. You don't want to go back there. And you are so happy to get a chance, you know. We're sort of a no money down type operation, by the way. We never promote government loans. We always want people to bootstrap from a very small base of capital. But you just need to know something that other people don't know. And it doesn't need to be, landing somebody on Mars or whatever.
And you stress this idea that needs to be a low capital business. Obviously, these people are not in good shape into a bank and get a loan to open up a store or something like that.
We don't promote that at all. Here's what we promote. Someone gets out of prison and they have nothing, zero. How can we get them their first job? So let's say it's a lawn service. They get out of prison. They have no money at all. They can maybe work a couple of days as a contractor doing something, get $50, $100, $200 together. And now they can go out and start soliciting door-to-door to cut lawns. They can rent. They can lease their lawnmower for a little while until they get a base of business. But we bring them from zero.
Now, what can employers do? Is there anything they can do to not be quite as judgmental?
They could look in the mirror. They could look at some of the things they've done in their lives. I know I look at that sometimes. I think about some of the things I've done with customers that were not correct and right in my younger days. This is what I want to say about that. Don't rely on employers to change their attitudes. To me, we've got to encourage them to do it, and we hope we're better people. We hope Hamilton's not a hypocrite, right?
One final question. You mentioned the L word, legislation. Right. Is there anything that politicians or Congress can do?
Yes. We've got to clamp down on Google. If they don't do it quickly themselves, then the legislators got to get off their butts and do something about it, because it is a clear injustice. And by the way, I know what you guys are kind of about, which, you know, both sides, let's go to solutions. It's not a left versus right issue. It's an issue of, like, this doesn't make any sense.
But what would they do?
Would say to Google, they would say to somebody, they would say to these internet companies, if this 24 or 25-year-old girl shoplifted when she was 16, whatever that math is, after a certain period of time, it gets deleted from the
search. So statute of limitations online.
You can do it for bankruptcy, you can do it for this.
And the EU has something called the right to be forgotten, or Germany does. Okay. That's quite controversial. But basically, that you can petition the social media platforms and Google to basically erase your profile. Okay. It's, you know, there's pros and cons to it, in that, you know, some of this might be legitimate information that would be important for people to know.
I don't know how far you want to go down this. Here's the issue. If everyone right here, doesn't matter, left, right, doesn't political affiliation, a religious background, if we could look at individuals holistically, we'd be okay. But in the application process, in the employment application process, that doesn't happen. It just is not happening right now. People come in, they do a quick Google search. It's a lot easier than looking at an app, right? They see that, and boom, these people go out. So we need legislation, definitely.
Brian Hamilton, thanks very much.
Great to be here.
At the top of the show, you mentioned reinvention and that you have some kind of reinvention in your past. So what's this deep, dark secret? I only know the current you.
I knew you'd get back to this. I shouldn't have said it. But when I lived in the UK, which was during my teens and 20s, and wanted to live in this country, I was known as Rick.
Well, maybe your friends all thought that, well, you're an American kid. That's what Americans ought to be called.
Yeah, but I wanted to be taken more seriously. And so when I hopped on the plane and came to live here, I left London as Rick and I arrived in New York as Richard.
And that's your deepest, darkest secret.
Well, there's another deep, dark secret, Jim. And I don't think I've ever told anybody this outside of my family. And that is that when I was 15, I was caught shoplifting from a store in England. But because I came from a relatively privileged background, or maybe I should drop the word relatively, a privileged background, the school intervened, and yeah, I was punished, but I wasn't thrown out. I was given a second chance. And a lot of kids from far less privileged backgrounds don't get that second chance.
Right. You know, we talk about the school to prison pipeline, and, you know, I think there is there are so many ways that kids from these less privileged backgrounds get sucked up into a system that makes it very easy to fall into crime, to get arrested, and then to be treated more severely, probably, than kids from, you know, the suburbs and more privileged areas.
But isn't it interesting with this show? Once again, it's happened, and I think it's one of the big stories of 2018. Google. There's a problem with Google. It seems that time and time and again, from one social problem or political problem to the next, we're finding out the dark side of social media and the internet.
Yes, but here's what's so tricky. It's, you know, you set up a search engine to find what's out there and find what people are looking for. The algorithms alone can produce these results. You know, nobody at Google said, hey, how can we make the lives of ex-cons even tougher?
Right.
You know, I don't think. I mean, I don't think they're virtuous, but I don't think they're like that. But it happens. These systems have a way of evolving in directions that no one predicted.
Yeah,
at the
outset. We're living in the middle of this extraordinary social experience that's changed all of our lives.
Experiment. And we're all part of it. So I think that, again, this will be one of the areas as solutions go, I'm not sure about, like, this European right to be forgotten. There's a lot of issues around it in terms of free speech and inquiry. And I think we have to be careful that our solutions aren't worse than the disease. Maybe there is something in the legal system that expunges records. It's really tough to say. And I think that that alone is not going to fix the problem.
Online privacy and the right to be forgotten sounds like the subject of a future episode.
We'll definitely have to get back to it. I want to stress one other thing, though, that came out of this show, and I think it's so important. It's the idea of entrepreneurship. So often we look at how to help people, and we say, somebody should do this for them. We need a government program to train them, or we need this program and that program. That may all be true, but so much forward social progress in this country has always come from people doing things for themselves. And I'm not just saying hardcore libertarian, rise or fall on your own. I think we should do everything we can. But sometimes helping someone get started with their own little business might be the best way. There's this great economist, Hernan de Soto from Peru, who did a lot of research on what the poor contribute to economies in the third world. And he discovered that the poor are incredibly industrious and entrepreneurial, but they have a hard time moving forward in those corrupt, in countries where they don't really have title to their businesses and things like that.
Yeah, I agree, but I'd also push back a little and say this isn't just a problem for the poor. This is also a problem for small businesses trying to get larger. There are too many parts of the economy where there are monopolies and big businesses not only dominating the business, but then going to politicians and getting them to write the rules that make it more difficult for entry
and
entrepreneurs. So there is a rule for good government here.
Right. And so, again, this should be a future show. And these aren't giant businesses. We're not talking about Google or ExxonMobil here. We're talking about associations of hairdressers who make it almost impossible for someone to become a hairdresser or open a nail salon, which are great entry-level businesses for people without college degrees. They make it really, really hard today. This is a big issue in the libertarian community that we should be dismantling a lot of these state rules that keep people like that out of the working economy.
It's How Do We Fix It? I'm Richard Davies.
I'm Jim Meggs.
And thanks for joining us. Our producer is Miranda Schaefer. We are a production of Davies Content. We make digital audio for companies and nonprofits. Check us out at our website, daviescontent.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.